First up on Express Yourself, I am joined by a very special guest, comedian Frank King, who will be presenting on September 17th for the Post-Independence Annual Longevity Project. Since 2015 in Garfield County, 58 people died by suicide, according to Garfield County Public Health. Additionally, 27% of those 58 people suffered from anxiety, 47% were diagnosed with depression, and half told someone they were considering suicide. In response, the theme for this year's Longevity Project is striking a conversation, mental health for all ages. And the goal of Frank King's session is to look at how we start conversations on mental health on a personal and community level. So Frank King, welcome to Express Yourself. How are you?
I am good, Raleigh, and I'm looking forward to expressing myself.
Now, a comedian talking about depression and suicide, how does that work?
Yeah, that's the elephant in the room, and I normally, when I keynote, and I'll do this when I go to on the 17th, well, a couple things. Number one, I believe where there's humor, there's hope. Where there's laughter, there's life, that nobody dies laughing. And depression and suicide run in my family. It's called generational depression and suicide. My grandmother died by suicide. My mother found her. My great-aunt died by suicide. My mother and I found her. I was 4 years old. I'll spare you the details. And I myself, at the height of the recession in April of 2010, came close enough to dying by suicide that I can tell you what the barrel of my gun tastes like. Spoiler alert, didn't pull the trigger. I tell that joke, and a friend of mine was at my keynote recently. I didn't know he was there, and he came up afterwards because he'd never heard me say that before. And he said this: "Hey, man, how come you didn't pull the trigger?" I go, "Hey, man, could you try to sound a little less disappointed?" That's the mental health comedian part. It's much easier to digest a conversation about depression and suicide if you can inject a little humor. Not jokes, but just, you know, funny stories, things that have happened to me. It sort of lightens, gives them comic relief, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm. And so, did you always know that you wanted to do comedy?
Oh, yes. It's the fourth grade. I told my first joke. The students laughed. My teacher actually excused herself to go to the teacher's lounge. And years later, she asked me, did I have any idea why she excused herself that morning? And I said, no. And she goes, because I was going to laugh, and I was afraid if I did that in your presence, I would break your heart. So she ran down to the teacher's lounge and shared my joke with the rest of the teachers.
Wow.
And then I, in high school, I did the senior talent show. I did stand-up. Nobody had ever done stand-up at a senior talent show. My mom made me go to college because education in my family is a big deal. I went to UNC Chapel Hill. And when I got out, I moved to San Diego, and they had a comedy store, and they had an open mic, and that was the beginning of the end of my insurance career and the beginning of my comedy career.
And so, how do you feel that talking about these issues, giving voice to your personal struggles with depression and suicide, what kind of impact has it had now that you have turned to comedy as your vocation? What impact do you see?
Well, I started stand-up full-time back in 1985, did the clubs for 7 years, then did some radio. I was a co-host of a morning show in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay.
The number one rock and roll morning show, by the way. And I drove that to number six in 18 months. I got fired. And then I began speaking on a corporate level because my comedy had always been very clean. And with the recession, the meeting planner said to me, "Frank, look, we love you dearly. We can't pay that kind of money just to come in and be funny. We need some, you know, we need to teach them something. There needs to be some learning objectives, some takeaways." And I could not for the life of me figure out what I had to teach or tell anybody. And I read a book by Judy Carter called The Message of You, Turning Your Life into a Money-Making Speaking Career. And about halfway through the book, Raleigh, I thought, oh my Lord, I do have something to talk about. And so I applied to a TED Talk. I got the first one I applied to. And I came out as depressed and suicidal. Nobody knew. My wife didn't know. My family didn't know. This is in 2014. And that allowed me to begin to rebrand as not a funny speaker, but a speaker who was funny. And what I discovered, Raleigh, as I was preparing for that TED Talk was, hardly anyone talks about depression and suicide. However, if you just mention the words depression and suicide out loud, people tell you the most amazing stories. Everybody seems to have a story. And some of these people, you know, I have just met. I mean, I was working a cruise ship. I sat down with a woman at breakfast because there was the only place in the Lido to sit. She looks up and she goes, "Hey, are you the comedian?" I go, "Well, did you enjoy the comedy show?" She goes, "I enjoyed it very much." I said, "Well, I'm the comedian." She goes, "What would you have said if I told you I hated the show?" They tell me I look a lot like him. And she asked me, "Is comedy all I do?" Very common question on the cruise ship. I said, "No, I'm a public speaker, and if you don't mind me bragging a little bit, I just nailed down my first TED Talk." She goes, "I love the TED Talks. What's the topic?" Now, Raleigh, I'd had this conversation many times. So I said to her, "Depression and suicide," and started to count down in my head. 3, 2, 1. She goes, "You know what? I tried to kill myself twice. We have just met." She goes, "First time was in college, not particularly serious. Second time was far more serious. I had graduated college," she said. "I'd graduated medical school. I had the knowledge, had the equipment." She said, "Frank, I had the IV started in my ankle. Had the suicide cocktail in one hand, the syringe in the other, getting ready to load it up. Phone rings." Now she's conflicted. Do you answer the phone? She goes, "Well, I thought I'd better because it might be somebody who would worry, come over and interrupt." So she picks up the phone. She says, "It was my 13-year-old son." She goes, "I don't know if he had a premonition or heard something in my voice, but the first thing he said was, 'Mom, don't do anything.' So I decided not to. I didn't give up on the idea of suicide," she said, "but I decided not to do it that day because I knew he would always feel guilty. Wasn't there something he could say or do at that moment to keep me from dying by suicide?" The good news is, and I'll talk about this on the 17th, Raleigh, there are things you can say, there are things you can do, because 8 out of 10 people who are suicidal are ambivalent. So I said, "How old is he now?" She said, "He's 21. I said, "Does he know his phone call saved your life?" And she goes, "No. How do you start that conversation?" And that phrase became my mantra: start the conversation on suicide. It's going to be the name of the book I'm going to write, because that's why the Glenwood Springs folks are bringing me in, simply to talk about how do you start that difficult conversation.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that a lot of people don't have the tools to address these conversations when they do come up, and so it's more likely we try to avoid the topic. But, for example, if a friend comes to us and says that they're depressed or they are thinking about suicide, what is your advice as somebody who talks about this as to how to speak to that person and what to say?
Well, let's start with if they say they're depressed or you believe they're depressed, and you can usually tell because, they're eating too much, can't eat, sleep too much, can't sleep. They sometimes let their personal hygiene go because they just can't drag themselves out of bed to shower. They aren't taking interest in social activities they used to take a great deal of interest in. So you ask them if they're depressed, and if they are depressed, then you need to ask them, "Are you having thoughts of suicide?" That's a very difficult question to ask. I have trouble asking it. I practice in the mirror at home before I'm going to ask somebody that. And I tell in my training, in my speeches, I say, "Look, if you can't ask that question, you find somebody who can." Because there's an old wives' tale that you should never mention the S word, suicide, in front of somebody who's depressed, because it might give them the idea. Like it didn't cross their mind already. And if they say they're suicidal, you ask them, "Do you have a plan?" And if they say they've got a plan, "What is your plan?" And Raleigh, if they have a plan and it's detailed, then that's when you need to become sort of a mental health first responder, like an EMT. You want to get them on the phone with the Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Or if they're a younger person, there's now a Suicide Prevention text line. You text the word CONNECT or HELP, 741-741. There'll be somebody roughly your age on the other end. Because sometimes young people are more forthcoming in text than they are in a conversation on the phone. Mm-hmm. Now, if they're depressed and suicidal and they don't have a particularly specific plan, my next step, and this is my protocol, not everybody else's, but I asked them, "Well, tell me, are you going to kill yourself?" And if they say no, then you finish with this question: "Well, then tell me why not." So you leave it on a positive note, you know, kind of a life-affirming question. "Well, tell me why you're not going to kill yourself." That's generally the protocol. And if they're suicidal and have a plan, it's detailed, they won't get on the phone. My advice is you pick up the phone, you call the Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and you talk to the volunteer, and they will do their best to talk the phone into the hand of the person who's in crisis. Now, the question always comes up, Raleigh: when do you dial 911? If they are an immediate danger to themselves or others, you have no choice but to dial 911.
And as you go forward teaching these things and sharing your comedy and laughing at yourself on stage and making these subjects something that we can broach, because often it is through humor that we can begin to get into uncomfortable topics, how has your outlook changed? Is depression still something that you struggle with?
Yes, it's a lifelong, you know, it's the way I'm wired. I stopped using the phrase battle depression because battle implies I could somehow win, and that's not going to happen. I can tie, I can lose and die by suicide, but there's no winning. It's kind of an uneasy truce like North and South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
The upside for me is that often when I speak, because I have something called chronic suicidality or chronic suicidal ideation, meaning for me and people like me, the option of suicide is always on the menu as a solution for problems large and small. My car broke down a couple of years ago. I had three thoughts unbid. One, get it fixed. Two, buy a new one. Three, I could just kill myself. That's chronic suicidality. Now, it's not a serious thought. I've been having those thoughts for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Not a serious thought. If you said to me, well, are you going to kill yourself? No. And if you said, Frank, why not? Why are you not going to kill yourself? Here's the reason, Raleigh. When I speak, oftentimes, and we'll do this on the 17th, I tell the audience, look, we'll do a little general Q&A with everybody, and then if you have a question you'd rather not ask in front of everybody, I'm going to stick around until every question is answered. And oftentimes people come up. I had a woman come up at a dental conference. She's a dentist, and everybody else is leaving the room. She's walking toward me, and I know she's crying. She gets close, and I can see she's weeping very quietly. And I said to her, you have chronic suicidality, don't you? And she nodded her head. I said, and you didn't know it had a name. She nods. You just thought you were some kind of freak. She nods. And I said, do you have a therapist? Nod. Well, when you get back home, do this. Set an appointment with a therapist. Tell the therapist everything you've learned this weekend, you know, about chronic suicidality. For goodness sakes, tell the person you Googled it. Don't tell them you learned it from a comedian. And about a week later, I got a note from her that said, Frank, you know, I think I went to that dental conference simply to meet you. You have changed my life, and I can't say that about a lot of people. So I'm like George Bailey in the movie, Raleigh, It's a Wonderful Life. I've been shown how other people's lives would be changed if I weren't there to deliver that message and save them from themselves, you know, maybe take them just far enough off the path of suicide they live, you know, a relatively normal length of life. So I can't kill myself, Raleigh, because if I did, I would take all those people with me.
Wow, that's really profound to see that sort of impact, that very real impact that you've had in so many people's lives, and through comedy. There was something I read, and I couldn't remember the title of the book, but essentially it was a journalist, and he was in a war-torn country in Africa, and he was around a fire with some men there, and in the distance they heard the spatter of machine gun, they heard bombs going off, and these men around the fire would keep returning to telling jokes and laughing. Meanwhile, this journalist is terrified, and he doesn't understand how they can go on laughing, so finally he asks his interpreter, how is it, despite everything they've seen and lived through, that they continue to laugh? And the man looks at him and tells him, the moment that you stop laughing, you're already dead. And I think...
Yeah. That's it, yeah.
Right. Your work, and often I think just the heaviness of a lot of what's going on in the world and what we have to deal with, it really, it's needing of that humor. And so I appreciate what you're doing. And once again, for listeners, at 5 p.m. on the 17th, there will be the beginning of this reception, and this is the Post-Independence Annual Longevity Project, and at 6 p.m. a panel discussion, followed by Frank King presenting at 7 p.m. And so you mentioned once again you'll be taking questions at the end of your presentation?
Yeah, Q&A. For everybody, you know, as a group, and then I will hang out and because, like I said, rarely is there not at least one person, sometimes a half a dozen or more, who are lined up because they've got a question about mental illness, suicide, perhaps suicide of a loved one. They don't understand. They can't quite figure out. You know, I'm there. I've gone someplace that their loved one went, and I looked over the edge and came back, and the loved one didn't, and they want to know, you know, why. What brought you back? Why didn't you go, you know, like that? So I try to demystify it for them.
Have you ever been to Glenwood Springs before?
No. I'm looking forward to the, somebody said, bring your bathing suit, because, you know, the hot spring.
That's right. There's a lot to do in Glenwood Springs, so I'm sure your host will be showing you around, and we look forward to receiving you in the Roaring Fork Valley. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we wrap this up, Frank King?
Yeah, the West. Now, the states in the West, they call that the Suicide Belt. I'll be speaking, I got my next TED Talk, I just nailed down another one, 3rd of November in Durango, and they had, I think, 32 people die by suicide in the last 2 years, and that's a town of 8,500.
Yes, it's...
So that's sort of the buckle of the suicide belt there in Durango, so that's why I'm going, my TEDx I'm going to mention, you know, one of the reasons I'm here in Durango is because there's an Indian reservation, Native Americans and Alaskan Americans, highest suicide rate among any ethnic or racial group. There are two colleges, one in Durango and one a community college in New Mexico. Three college students a day die by suicide. And then, of course, Durango itself, with 32 suicide deaths in the last couple of years, is just, you know, they're trying to do something to stem the tide.
And so you get to form a part of that, teaching us to have the conversation.
And also, so I'll be starting the conversation. By the way, by way of a TED Talk.
And daring to use humor. I think it's brave and but needed.
It's, you know, people said, how'd you pick the topic of suicide prevention? Well, you know, the topic picked me. And being a man, I think they appreciate, because men tend to just pull themselves up by their bootstraps, or at least attempt that. See a man on stage, you know, being somewhat vulnerable, coming out as depressed and suicidal, it hopefully will inspire others to feel comfortable, you know, other men, other women, people, to feel comfortable doing the same.
Well, thank you so much, Frank King, for speaking with Katie and Kay on Express Yourself, the mental health comedian, and also a suicide prevention and postvention public speaker and trainer. We appreciate it.